profiles are interesting because there have been occasions in which, let's say, overzealous MIT students have put pornographic GIF files on the network and sent them out, and I'm sure you, like other network administrators, occasionally get other networks calling you up and saying, "Stop those people from doing that." Is that something that you, as a system administrator, should be able to do? Should you be able to stop your people from doing things?
Well, the pornographic GIF images is actually a very complicated issue because there are several different sources of those images. The case we have at MIT is MIT does have a harassment policy, and we do have a policy for the use of the MIT network that does make certain types of pornographic images inappropriate to send across our network. But frankly, I know of no incident where one student sent a pornographic image personally to another student that ever caused a problem. The case where we have problems is when somebody operates an archive or a file server or an FTP server with a publicly writable directory, and people literally all over the world store these files and fetch these files. So in some sense, it's an exchange site, so to share with your friends. And in fact, I've monitored some of these, and you see a file appears with a name like, "Please upload, you know, such and such file .gif." And a few days later, a file with that name appears, and presumably the person who created the file with the long funny name has actually gone and fetched that file. And now, of course, it's still sitting there for anybody else who might want it. And the situation we've had on the MIT campus has been that we have faculty members who actually run one of these machines that basically say that they don't endorse pornographic images on their system, but at the same time, they're not going to be policemen and go around and cleaning it up. They said they have a legitimate reason for having that publicly writable directory, and they're not going to be playing internet cop, in essence. And we, myself as a system administrator, are just not in a position to do anything about that. If the faculty of MIT want to deal with this at a faculty meeting or otherwise censure other faculty members or come up with a policy statement, well, that's certainly something that might happen, but I don't have the authority as the network manager at MIT to unilaterally go and stomp people.
Well, let's say I'm the manager for the research network in Fredonia, for example, and my users are going across and grabbing all these files, and they're hosing my network. They're offending my users. They're getting rid of my infrastructure. Shouldn't you be doing something since you're the source of those files? You as MIT?
Well, certainly things I can do is I can point out to the faculty members who run the system that there's real harm being done, particularly when we have situations of bandwidth saturation and what have you. And when a specific incident like that happens, we usually can do something about it. I mean, these people are, the faculty members involved are not without sympathy to the problem and will react to a particular incident. Again, they just don't want to be made into the internet cops. And if I say that a particular file or a particular situation is causing a particular problem right now, they'll certainly respond to that. They won't say, "Well, that's just somebody else's problem." It's just that, again, it's not so much the reaction to the incident; it's the "I won't be the cop" mentality.
Okay. Well, they're not the cop, and you're not the cop. Who's the cop? Should it be the FBI? Do we need a police on the internet? The bit police?
Well, you raise an interesting point, because if all the traffic was within one country, we might say, well, you know, if the stuff that's being transmitted is against a law, well, there are legal authorities. Of course, a lot of the stuff that's around is actually crossing borders. And in fact, it's not uncommon at all to see the connections that come into places to get images and even software. Let's face it, legitimate users are coming from, you know, all continents and many, many countries. So, in fact, it's very hard to figure out what the internet law would be. So I would try to stay away from trying to create internet cops, because it's not clear what law it is they have to enforce.
There was a recent article in the Communications of the ACM which dealt with the question of cryptography and cryptokeys and the role of law enforcement. And that proposal basically said, well, you know, if we have totally secure messaging and totally secure internet, then we're in a position where the FBI won't be able to track down a terrorist or a drug dealer, and therefore that encourages crime. Should there be a loophole in the security system or a way that the FBI ought to be able to come in with a proper warrant to be able to figure out what's been going on?
Well, there's actually two answers to that question. Let me answer more generally. The use of cryptography to provide privacy to messages is a new thing, at least in terms of very strong cryptography being available potentially to a very large number of people. And that's a very big plus for providing privacy. And, you know, computers to date have had a really bad track record on the privacy front. Usually they're used to take away your privacy. Corporations, credit card companies have databases of people. I understand some states are looking to digitize the picture that's on your driver's license, and that'll be stored in the database. And so computers have been the source of removing privacy. And here's an example where actually some privacy can be brought back not only to individuals, but that same technology can be used by the organizations, credit card companies, or what have you, that want to do the right thing and protect their databases against hacking and what have you. So it's a two-edged sword. Both edges cut in our favor. We get personal privacy, and by providing the tools to improve security, those who do have databases will be able to better protect them from bad entries and hacking and what have you. So that's the first answer I'll give you. And as far as I sympathize with law enforcement's concerns that the bad guys of the world might be able to use this technology to communicate beyond the ability of the FBI to listen in, and that will make crimes easier to commit and that will aid criminals. Well, my comment is, telephones aid criminals. Automobiles aid criminals. Heck, before you had the automobile, doing a fast getaway was next to impossible. And yet...
Well, horses aid criminals, too.
So you say, you know, maybe we should outlaw automobiles, or maybe we should put a feature in your automobile that the FBI, by remote control, can, like, make it stop. And I don't think people would sort of go along with that. And this is just another example. As technology advances, it changes the way the world is. It makes some crimes easier to commit and makes certain law enforcement easier to do, and it's a two-edged sword.
It sounds like you're saying that the technology is not necessarily going to take away privacy, that the Internet can actually enhance privacy if properly applied, or at least protect it?
You know, technology provides the ability for individuals and organizations to do different things. And I think technology on the Internet will provide for increasing privacy of personal communications, or if not properly used, or at least not used in the interest of individual privacy, can be used to take it away. It's all up to how we use the technology and how others use the technology. It's not the technology itself.
Thank you, Jeff Schiller. This has been Geek of the Week. We've been talking to Jeffrey Schiller from Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
This has been Geek of the Week, brought to you by Sun Microsystems and by O'Reilly & Associates. To purchase an audio cassette or audio CD of this program, send electronic mail to radio@ora.com. Internet Talk Radio. The medium is the message.